Oh boy, this could be a first. I'm going to preview what I'm going to talk about on tomorrow's show. Welcome to Ed Said here on the Talk of Connecticut. This is the podcast that accompanies Ed Says. Someone pointed it out to me via email, and I, of course, started to look into it. And, well, it's going to drive me crazy. North Carolina, oh, you are just the worst now, aren't you? As they are trying to essentially steal an election. They lost the election, and now they're trying to undermine the results. After Governor-elect Roy Cooper was put into office, Pat McCrory would not concede, saying it was too close to call, and then eventually he gave up. But now, Senate Bill 4 and House Bill 17 would prevent the incoming governor from making certain appointments to the cabinet, reduce the power of the State Board of Elections, and change the way potential unconstitutional bills are legally challenged. So essentially, the Republicans in North Carolina lost the election for governor, and now, since they are in control, are changing the rules entirely because they didn't get their way. This, folks, is not how our government is supposed to work. And if I were living in North Carolina, I would be beside myself in rage. So I'm going to spend the next few hours delving into this, and of course, in the morning, reading more updates about it and how nefarious it could possibly be. Because what it looks like is sour grapes, and rightfully so. North Carolina continues to step in it, and I got to say, I guess I won't be visiting again anytime soon. They've lost my business. Not that they care. Here you go. Here, enjoy today's Ed Said, the podcast of Ed Says. The best bits from today's show, and it was a good one. Lots of calls, lots of conversation. Here you go.
The issues affecting Connecticut and the world. This is Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Unbiased, unabashed. Join the conversation now at 888-574-2723.
Oh, good morning, hello, and welcome. It is December 15th, Thursday, 2016. The week is almost over. Hopefully everybody is preparing for a good weekend. If you want to get in on the show, you heard the number there. You are always welcome to voice your opinion on any topic on the agenda today. We'll talk to Fox News Radio's John Decker about the possibility of Obama closing Gitmo before the end of his term, the role of the Electoral College, the latest on the Russian hacks, a brutal cold on the way, weed going legit in Massachusetts. Can we believe anything anymore? And first, I want to talk about lapse of judgment. And I want you to know that that is in quotes, a lapse of judgment. There are two stories, one local and one national, that deal with lapses in judgment. And let me say, first of all, that I am not innocent here. I have had plenty of lapses in judgment over my lifetime. But using that as a defense and then following that defense with more defense that would seem to alleviate any sort of responsibility is wrong in my eyes. And these two stories will illustrate that. First of all, you might remember back during the primaries, a rally for Donald Trump, James Franklin McGraw was charged in March after he was seen on video punching Rakeem Jones in the face at an event in Fayetteville, North Carolina. When commenting on that during that time, right after the assault, the next time we see him, we might have to kill him. Those were his words. And he ended up in court before it because of it. Because he punched someone in the face. He pleaded no contest to assault and disorderly conduct, 30-day suspended sentence, and a year of unsupervised probation. They did consider charging Trump with inciting a riot, but did not, because at an earlier rally in February, Trump said he personally wanted to punch a protester in the face. When asked if his language contributed to the violence, Trump said the following month, "I hope not. I truly hope not." Well, it might not. It might have. But my issue is with Mr. James Franklin McGraw, not with Mr. Trump. This time around, don't worry, there will be plenty of issues I have with him. But Donald, do you think that your words incited violence of this type?
Oh no!
I'm gonna play the hell out of that. James Franklin McGraw met with the person he assaulted in court with Rakeem Jones, and McGraw telling Jones, "You know what you did, and I know what I did. I'm not going to say you were wrong, or I'm wrong. Well, first of all, Mr. McGraw, you are clearly wrong because you are the one who was charged. Let me just point that out. You are the one who had a 30-day suspended sentence and is now on probation for a year. To say that you know what you did, speaking to the man you punched, and I know what I did, speaking of yourself, you are responsible for your own actions and your reactions to the actions of others. It wasn't Mr. Jones who was in court and being sentenced. He continued, though. I hate it worse than anything in the world, he said. If I met you in the street and the same thing occurred, I would have said, go on home, one of us will get hurt. That's what I would have said. But we are caught up in a political mess today, and you and me, we got to heal our country. Well, I would say to you, Mr. McGraw, your opportunity to heal the country was before you assaulted someone. See, here's the thing. You can disagree with people, and you can argue about it. And if you want to continue arguing till you're red in the face and screaming, that's A-okay. But when you hurl threats or assault someone, you're probably going to find yourself in trouble. And that is exactly what you did by saying, I'm not going to say you were wrong or I'm wrong. Well, you were clearly wrong. And it is this inability to accept responsibility. And the idea, I applaud Mr. Jones for being able to shake this man's hand and put it behind him. Because this is a man who not only assaulted him, but said the next time we see him, we might have to kill him. And then manages to not accept any sort of responsibility. And again, I've had plenty of lapses in judgment. And I have wanted, on a daily basis, there are people I want to punch in the face. But I don't. Because that's not how it works in a civil society. Have I punched people in the face? Sure. But when you punch someone in the face, unless it's self-defense, you're the one in the wrong. So when he says, I'm not going to say you were wrong or I'm wrong, well, you're wrong, sir. You are absolutely wrong. But this is the type of mindset we're dealing with. An inability to reflect on one's actions and oneself. It was
the politics.
Politics, he blames it on messy politics. And then he says, to the man he punched, you and me, we got to heal our country. Now, mind you, I don't think I've ever punched, all right, I've punched one stranger in the face. But that was at a bar, and things get hinky when you're young and at a bar. But otherwise, anybody that I've punched has been somebody I've known, whether it was a friend I was in an argument with, or, listen, people get punched sometimes. And the thing is, you have to at least admit fault. The last person I punched in the face, I was totally in the wrong. Absolutely in the wrong. And I had to accept it. And I had to apologize. And it still eats at me at this day. But this guy, McGraw, is like, bah, you had it coming. Let's go to Susan in Manchester. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. It's a chilly one. I just like to make a comment. I don't condone violence. I think Trump, that was so uncool. But you hear it on both sides. I mean, all through the riots all summer, it was the president doesn't condemn it. Nobody speaks out. And then we have Vice President Biden saying that he wants to take Trump out in the back of a woodshed or whatever he said, that comment. I mean, it's so... I don't know what's wrong with both sides. I mean, politicians, I mean, we have to admit it's on both sides. There's so much violence now, and it has to stop. And
well, I'm not even talking... So this isn't even politics. This is this specific individual at this point, and an irresponsibility in being able to accept responsibility. There is too much of it these days, and blaming it on politics, I don't think is the answer, because I don't care what anybody says... They cannot influence you to do something that is not in your heart.
No, but you hear it on TV all the time, and they're so disrespectful. I'm talking about, the remarks the news reporters make, right down to the commentators, right down to the all the elected officials. I mean, there's just, I don't know, a loss of respect nowadays, and it's on... it's on both sides of the party, and these are the people that we're supposed to look up to, and it's in Hollywood. It's their remarks they make about the election. It's everywhere. It's I don't know what happened.
Well, Susan, I would argue that the president-elect is the leader of the pack when it comes to this.
Everybody knows that's not true.
How is that not true? He called his comments on John McCain alone, his comments on the Gold Star family. Susan, I thank you for the call, but again, this is you're trying to turn a commentary on this man's actions against President Obama and Joe Biden, who weren't tied into this. And if you're going to look into the entire political scene, when it comes to comments, sure, Joe Biden said that, but then you have to look at Trump saying he wants to punch a protester in the face. He says that McCain, he prefers his heroes that don't get captured. The actions and words he said towards a Gold Star family. You cannot, and that attitude that you were just presenting in response to my comment is part of the problem. When the finger is pointed, it needs to be pointed equally where it is deserved. This man, Mr. McGraw, is incapable of pointing the finger at himself without pointing it at Mr. Jones, the man who he punched, saying, you know what you did and I know what I did. Well, guess what? Whatever Jones did wasn't illegal. It might have hurt Mr. McGraw's little itchy-bitchy feelings, but it wasn't illegal, whereas Mr. McGraw crossed the line into physical assault. So you are actually perpetuating what I'm arguing against, because you are able to, you brought up Biden right quick, but when I pointed out all the times that the president-elect has done those things, you're unable to criticize him. And he is, in fact, the leader of comments like that. It is what, it's his currency. And if you, I don't care if you voted for him, I don't care that he's going to win, he is going to be the president. But criticism needs to be leveled across the board at all figures and appropriately. And if you cannot objectively say that he has brought down the level of discourse when it comes to politics, you're wrong. You're simply wrong. 888-574-2723. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be right back after a quick break here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. All right, let's go right back to the phones. Tom in West Hartford. Good morning, Tom.
Well, my good friend Ed, would you allow me to read a small one-paragraph comic strip that was in the paper this morning, and the Hartford Current is the only paper I read the funnies. That's all I read here.
Go ahead.
I think you're going to get a charge out of this because you were talking about the media and specifically journalists and what's going on and the influence of the media and with the Lise Wheel and so on. And you made some comments and you guys were discussing it. But I thought you'd enjoy this. This comic strip is called Baldo, and it's written by Cantu and Castellanos, Hispanics. And it's about the Hispanic culture, and it deals with that. And I enjoy reading it because he's a good writer. And here's what he says. His father says to his daughter, Gracie, if you're going to be a journalist, we need to hammer out some fundamentals. And Gracie's pensive, and then he says, let's start with simple truths. Like, what color is the sky? And Gracie thinks, and she's in front of her laptop, and she says, well, what color do you want it to be? And then he kind of looks at her, and then she says, I want happy readers. I think that is brilliant, because that's exactly a commentary on what many of us think about what's going on in journalism today. What color do you want it to be? And that's what it'll be, because we want happy readers. I mean, I think that's just neat.
And I don't disagree with the sentiment. I'm looking at it right now. And it reminds me of something Denzel Washington said in an interview about the need for people, for media outlets to be first rather than right. And they'll just publish something without worrying about it. I have said before that all media outlets appease their audiences. Not necessarily by lying, except maybe through omission, putting a certain perspective on it to appease that audience. And knowing that, you can glean the truth from going to multiple sources. I've said many times, if you go to one source that agrees with you, you are doing yourself a disservice. And I've also promised that I am never, ever, ever going to filter the information I get to appease anyone who listens to me.
I'll tell you what, that's a very good thing that you're saying, because I'm going to tell you that I know that you're not a Trump fan.
I've made that clear.
But that doesn't mean I can't call you and have civil discourse with you, because you're able to do that.
We should be able to.
But you're not always able to do that, but most of the time you're able to do that.
Some things I can't abide by.
A little emotional.
There are things that I can't abide by, and as people listen more, they'll know what they are, and there are certain things that either touch a nerve with me one way or another, and I'm passionate about, and the one that will never fly with me is the repetition of lies or mistruths. As I've described before, I spent a year doing talk radio in Boston as a producer for a show, the host of which is now on The Blaze. So I spent a year in the conservative side of it. And I was fine. I enjoyed getting a different perspective. But when the Acorn story broke and it was shown that those videos had been edited, and the host I was working for refused to air that side of it and continued to hammer Acorn and Obama and spread mistruths, that is what I can't abide by. He had a responsibility, and he did exactly what that comic strip describes. He did it for his audience.
What is your take, though? What is your take? This is about Russia, because let me ask you a question. What is your take about the CIA, who has made many blunders over the last 8 or 9 years, and we all know, most of us know what they were. The CIA is not flawless. But what is your take on the CIA not wanting to be forthcoming? I'm using that word because it may not be correct, but that's what the Senate, the congressmen are saying in their committees, not willing to be forthcoming with additional information. When the FBI has come up, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe I read the story twice, and I heard it on a couple of news sources as well, came out and said that they didn't see any undue influence by Russians through hacking and so on, and the CIA is saying otherwise. Is there some issue going on here in your mind? That is it possible that the CIA is doing something by omission, as you had mentioned, or should they be submitting this information to the subcommittees? They do work for us. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I thank you for the call as always, and I will address you off the line. When it comes to the CIA, there are a multitude of reasons why they might not be doing it. I am not privy to them all, specifically the idea that the incoming administration has made it clear that they don't really think that any intelligence agency knows what they're talking about. So it could be a matter of getting ducks in a row. It could be a matter of seeing where the Congress falls in this position. And it could be how they're going to present it. I am not going to pretend to know. You are right, the CIA, no one is perfect. But when the entirety of the intelligence community puts forth a report, not saying so much that it 100% happened, but saying that all the evidence points to it, there is still a chance that something didn't happen. But when all evidence points towards it, I am going to lean on the side of the people whose job it is to do these things. The thing about our intelligence community is that we depend on them heavily for security and things like this. And the idea that the president-elect says, meh, you know what, they don't know what they're talking about, that's problematic for me. So I don't know their reasonings. I don't know the inner workings. There are certainly, and as we heard in other agencies, there's probably factions within the departments that are causing problems with each other, and that needs to be sorted out first, and it may be a unified front. So I can't really speak entirely to it, but when it comes down to it, I'm going to go with what their investigation comes up with. Let's go to Bob in Suffield. Good morning, Bob. Bob, are you still there?
Yeah, how you doing? Good morning, Ed.
Doing all right. Go right ahead. We got about a minute and a half.
Okay, I just want to make some final statements on as far as the hacking with the Russians on our election. You know, I'm sick and tired of hearing about it. You know, the election's over. Trump won. The liberal side should get on with their lives and start planning for 2020 or whatever. Now, you and I disagree on many things. I'm a Trump supporter. You're anti-Trump. And as far as Mitch McConnell, McCain, I'm a veteran, Air Force. during the Vietnam era. And a lot of veterans, I thought it was maybe 60% of veterans, maybe 70, voted for Trump. Now, McCain, you know, you bring up statements about McCain, which is true. He called him a nut hero. But, you know, when you look at McCain's career in the Senate, right, and you look at what he's done, he was in the Ukraine, Ed, before the crisis started, stirring up trouble. Then he got an award in Syria from different characters of the opposite of Gaddafi, okay? He's been involved in troublemaking spots. So you look it up.
But see, anyway, what you're missing is what you're missing when it comes to the Trump McCain thing is there is a way to disagree with someone without completely disrespecting them. I'm up against a break. I thank you for the call. And what Donald Trump did was completely disrespect him, and his supporters ate it up. Donald Trump, who got deferments or didn't have to serve because of heels, spurs, or whatever, we'll be right back on Ed Says. All right. Thank you for holding through the break. Larry in Bridgeport. Let's go to Larry. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well.
Ed, just a couple of quick comments real quick. First off, I'm a firm believer. You know, I'm an independent voter, per se. I actually am a registered Democrat. I voted with my daughter for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic...
the primaries.
Primaries. A couple of quick comments, if I could. I was against the war in Iraq. I actually voted for President Obama. And the other comment I want to make is I thought George W. Bush was a terrible president. Saying that, I am not quick to trust the CIA, okay? Whether it's the Bay of Tonkin, whether it's the weapons of mass destruction, there's so many historic events that they've gotten wrong. And I put a value on human life, value on American men and women who want to defend our country. And if it was up to someone like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, we would already be at war with Russia. And Congressman Nunez, who actually was born in Mexico, he is a very good congressman who's only asking for a briefing. And he has a high level of security clearance, as do many of the congressmen, anyway, on that panel. But they're just asking for a briefing to see some semblance of facts before we go headstrong into another conflict. So I am not a war hawk, but John McCain was disrespected by Donald Trump, and I didn't agree with that. But remember, in 2011, John McCain called Ron Paul unpatriotic in the presidential debate because he was against the war in Iraq. And people don't know it, but Ron Paul served two tours in Vietnam as a surgeon. And he said, John, you can disagree with me, I can disagree with you, but I lost respect for you, John, when you attacked me as being unpatriotic because I didn't want to go headstrong into Iraq. So John McCain,
now Larry,
I'm not agreeing.
Let's get to the chase here. I agree with you. I am not a fan of McCain. What I'm talking about is the level of discourse. I am not a hawk either. I am like you. I believe in keeping our soldiers, our men and women here, using them for defense. And I agree with you that McCain and his ilk would probably have gotten us into more problems. When you talk about the CIA and the weapons of mass destruction, I mean, that's also the administration of that time. They were parroting that. And it's not as though they didn't hear otherwise. So that was a whole systemic situation. But I agree with you when you talk about, I mean, the same thing happened to John Kerry. See how we're manipulated when he got swift voted. This was a guy who served and his experience changed his perspective. And somehow that made him, they painted him to be unpatriotic. So I don't disagree with you in any way, shape or form. But my point was the level of discourse, the idea that we are somehow, I guess Trump speaking his mind with disregard to respect for who he's speaking to, especially in the position he has ascended to, is problematic for me, and I think it emboldens people.
I agree with you. One quick comment, James Clapper and the National Security Agency, he's the head of it. He's highly respected. He's a lieutenant general. He has come out as recently as 2 days ago and said, we are briefed on everything by the CIA. We, as an agency, don't show any proof of Russian hacking. So James Clapper, who's highly respected, who works for President Obama for 7 years, he and his agency at the highest levels of government, as of 2 days ago, said we, as an agency, don't show any proof in all our briefings of any Russian hacking. So I'm just saying, show us the proof, or show these congressmen the proof, before we go headstrong into another conflict. That's all I'm saying.
And I agree with you there. And I think we will see... I think we'll see information come out. If it exists and if it is legitimate, I just think it's dangerous to dispel it immediately as well.
I understand, but after the history of the CIA in Iraq and everything else, I won't even get into all the other events, I just want to put a premium on American lives. That's all. That's all I want to do.
And I agree with you.
John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman don't think twice about going in and trying to push democracy in cultures that have been around for 1,000 or 2,000 years. They're just terrible people.
I agree with you in the sentiment, not the words, but certainly in some of their actions. It's an apt description. Larry, I thank you for the call.
I just get angry, that's all.
I understand.
All right, thank you,
and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. 888-574-2723. And one of the previous callers basically said, liberals, get over it. I wrote that down because that's problematic. Getting over something, I have said multiple times, and I shed the designation of liberal just because my conservative side doesn't align with a hardcore conservative. I am fiscally conservative just in different departments that other people are. Most people who are considered hardline conservatives are conservative when it comes to fiscally. It means cutting social programs, and I believe a social safety net is necessary, is better. It is better for our society, is better for everyone. I am a firm believer in that. Our defense budget being that it is, it could be trimmed back a little. Some of that could go to Veterans Affairs, and some of it could go to other areas to bring down our expenditures. The idea of our military having shrunk or being behind the times is a falsehood. Maybe it has shrunk personnel-wise, but that is because we don't need those numbers. We still have plenty of servicemen and women. And if there is equipment that they need, that is one thing. But there is a lot of money spent in it, and I am pro. And wars are expensive. Let's not forget that we have been in perpetual war or conflict for two decades. And that is expensive. And that is where my fiscally conservative side comes in and says, hey, why don't we bring them home, have them be safe, and stop lobbing bombs that cost a couple million per drop or even more. But when the caller said liberals get over it, I'm assuming I'm going to fall under that because I am someone who wants to draw attention to this. If this is an issue, if this is something that is happening, it cannot be ignored. If we were being fed information through whoever's fault that was false and manipulating, don't you want to know? Do you want to live completely just led by the nose? Or wouldn't you like to know who is doing the leading? Like, that is what's happening here. And that is what the speculation is. And it will come out. But what the morning started off talking about, which I love it when the calls overtake the agenda, because that means we're talking about things. But I was talking about the lapse of judgment and a lack of accountability as the Trump supporter and the protester reconciled. James Franklin McGraw was charged and sentenced to a 30-day suspended sentence and probation for a year unsupervised. But in his statement about shaking hands with the person he assaulted, he basically said, you know what you did and I know what I did. I'm not going to say you were wrong or I'm wrong. And my thing is, James, yes, you were wrong. If you're going to punch someone, if you were the aggressor, at least be man enough to say you are wrong. And I admitted on the air, for whoever's listening, that I have punched people before. Some deservingly in my mind. But if you are the one who's the aggressor, which, as I was saying, I was in a case or two, then you are the a-hole. It's as simple as that. When I threw that punch, or punches, I was in the wrong. The apology came from me. There was no, I said, well, you know, you kind of deserved it because X, Y, Z. No, no one deserves it. In your mind, you might think so. I go through my commute alone that I want to throw handfuls of change at people's cars for the things they do. Whether it's doing 100 miles an hour down 91. Yeah, I saw the guy in the old school Subaru doing that today. The person who runs the red light. Those people in my head deserve to be punched in the face. But I can't do that. And neither can Mr. McGraw. And since he did punch someone in the face, he needs to recognize that it wasn't a lapse in judgment. It was a lack of control. And not only that, but he can't even be contrite about it. And I bring up this lapse of judgment because it happened right here in Glastonbury, as the police chief there is going to retire after some emails were sent. And he used that phrase, a lapse in judgment, after photos of nude women sent on his official town email account. And after being asked about the emails, he decided to retire. He submitted his notice yesterday after 40 years on the police force, the last five as chief. And apparently what happened was there were three emails that were sent from his account, and all three included photos of naked women. And one contained a headline and caption that could be considered racially offensive. He is not denying that he sent those emails, but he said he did not recall sending them. So he doesn't recall sending them, but he said he's not denying that he received emails and occasionally forwarded them to their friends, saying, I should be holding myself to a higher standard. This is a Glastonbury Police Chief David Caron. In a 10-minute meeting, he decided he will be retiring. And the idea that I don't recall it, or again, this is the same thing. Like, own it. If you're not going to say you did it, but you're going to step down, like, stop with the implied guilt. And don't call it a lapse of judgment. It wasn't a lapse of judgment. You had the opportunity to not do something. And I get it. I'm a dude. I like naked pictures of ladies. But I'm not going to send them around on my work email. And if I'm in a position where it actually means something, I'm probably not going to send them around at all. 888-574-2723. This whole lapse of judgment. Most of the time, no, it wasn't a lapse of judgment. You exercised bad judgment. You were selfish and decided to do something without foresight. And now you're paying the price. 888-574-2723 at Ed Says CT on Twitter, and Ed Says at talkofconnecticut.com is the email. Up next, a couple of stories I want to talk about, including what can we believe as a feel-good story comes out as not true, possibly. That's next on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Let's go right back to the phones. Solomon in East Hartford, good morning. Go right ahead.
I was wondering, I've got this gut feeling that if this Hillary's emails, I mean, those who did the release was coming from our old friend Israel, the Israelis.
There's no indication at this point. It all seems to have been Russian, and as far as what we've heard, and it wasn't really a hack so much as somebody fell for an old phishing scam. But that is that everything indicates. In fact, I'll get into it a little later in the show. That Putin had a hand in directing it.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Solomon.
I like your show. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. 888-574-2723. If you were on social media or watching any news in the past few days, you probably saw the story out of Tennessee where a terminally ill child asked to meet Santa as his final wish. And the man playing Santa said to the boy, when you get to those pearly gates, you tell him you're Santa's number one elf, and I know they'll let you in. It's a feel-good story. The story ends with the child passing while Santa is holding him in his arms. Apparently, Santa, can you help me, were the child's last words. But in a note published yesterday, the editor of the paper, Venable and News Sentinel, said they were unable to verify the account after it was published because the man who played Santa refused to provide the identities of the child's family or the nurse who apparently called him to the hospital. CNN called all the major hospitals in the area that treat children, and none could confirm this account. The coroner's office unable to provide information without a name. A search of obituaries does not yield any conclusive proof confirming or refuting the account. And Santa has not responded to multiple calls seeking comment after the fact. Although someone claiming to be a spokesman said he was working on a response. Now, the man who played Santa says he stands by his account, saying, if some people want to call me a liar, I can handle that better than I can handle a child dying in my arms. It sticks and stones. And in an email, the newspaper said their statement speaks for itself. So the question is, was this a real story, or are we so pessimistic that we couldn't just appreciate the story for what it was? Or is truth more important if this man is exploiting a fake death of a child for a moment in the sun or notoriety, as it has happened before? What is more important? Couldn't we use a feel-good story right now? And while the death, whether fictional or not, of a five-year-old is not a feel-good story, but them getting their last wish in a terminal case certainly puts a positive note on a tragic story. But is this a result of our pessimism, or is this just another example of people being people? Now, the story began to unravel, and Snopes ran a piece scrutinizing the account, as there was no second sourcing on any of it, and saying a Snopes reporter saying part of the issue here is a lot of outlets don't give the reporters time to vet these things. And this goes back to an earlier caller who talked about the comic strip that talked about giving readers what they want. And we talk a lot about fake news and how you can't trust the media. There's so many of you out there that call in and talk about a media bias and how unfair they were to your candidate or this candidate and the other. So where is the balance? Because the truth is that they do need to keep an audience. And we, as the audience, are to blame. Because when we see a news story that we don't agree with, we automatically yell bias. When maybe that's not the case. Maybe what they're reporting, it used to be that when something was reported on, you wouldn't necessarily take it as gospel, but you go, oh, that's interesting. But now we defend the people that are being reported on more so than we defend the estate of the media. And I don't understand it. Just because something that is reported doesn't fit your narrative or your feelings, and we are to blame for this. You know, every time I opened the sports page over the last 30 years, I had to see my football team being terrible. And I couldn't go, oh, no, that's not true. This is biased and incorrect. No, I just had to deal with it. And sometimes facts are facts. And now people are going outside to alternative forms of media, which do just that. The Salons and the Breitbarts of the world do exactly what that newspaper strip we were just talking about does. Cater to their audiences. And now CNN and Fox do as well, but to a lesser extent. And there are outlets out there that will give it to you straight. But you can't claim that an outlet is biased because they are delivering news to you that you don't like. That's just a tough life. Like, that's just, you're not always going to get roses and sunshine and puppy dogs. Sometimes you're going to get news that you don't necessarily want to hear. 888-574-2723. This Santa Claus story just sits with me, though, because I saw it everywhere, people sharing it, and I'm an emotional guy, like hearing this kid wanting to meet Santa as his last wish, obviously, like, hit a chord. And the idea that this might not be true. Is it more important to find the truth, even in softball pieces like this? Or is it better that we just let it go Well, who's it hurting to let this guy have his moment in the sun if he made this whole thing up? And if it makes thousands of people feel good, is that more important? Or should we be vetting stories all the way to something like this? And if we can't vet something as simple as this, are we truly lost? And who is responsible for that? The race for ratings and revenue? 888-574-2723, the number into the studio, at Ed Says CT on Twitter. And speaking of Santa and Christmas and the holidays and New Year's and winter and all of that, also means the cold. And there are a few things you need to be aware of as the cold hits, one of which is your car. Because the winds could drive windshields down as far as negative 25 and cause power outages. That is the news as far as the weather goes. And Bridgeport officials have activated emergency measures, and I'm sure that will continue throughout the state. One of the things people do in the winter is warm up their cars. I'm guilty of it. I don't want to scrape the thing. But it really doesn't need that much time. 2009 study found on average that Americans thought they should idle their car for over 5 minutes before driving in temperatures that were below 32 degrees. Now, cars get worse fuel economy when it is cold out, but you don't necessarily need to warm it up that long. You should warm up your car no more than 30 seconds before driving in the winter, as the engine will warm up faster when being driven. Now, the only reason my car's running is to defrost. You know, if it's a clean windshield and rear window and it's just cold out, I'll just drive. I start it up and I get going. The other reason you shouldn't be warming up your car is the warm-up car thefts are on the rise. New Haven Police Department warning drivers everywhere that thieves specifically targeting cars left running and unattended to warm up or stay warm. They are targeting them all around. They happen at gas stations while you're paying for gas or inside the store. And thieves have their eyes peeled for these cars. So the National Institute of Health is asking you to follow these simple steps. Never leave your car running or the keys in the ignition. A lot of cars now are push button. Don't require them in the ignition. Keep valuables out of sight. I mean, yes, always roll up your windows, lock your car. Never leave the vehicle title in your car. Be alert when approaching your car. Only park your car in busy, well-lit areas. Install a mechanical locking device like the club. Or if your vehicle has an alarm, use it. Those of you with keyless entry systems, they know how to defeat those vehicles. Thieves can block electronic signals sent to key remotes to lock vehicles. And then the drivers leave thinking your car's been locked. You got to hear it, wait for it to beep. But warming up your car, according to this, only takes 30 seconds. But defrosting takes so much longer, and it's too cold for me to scrape. So it's going to be cold out there, and what I need to get is that remote start. So I don't have to walk outside at all. I just need to be ready to go. So as it gets colder, remember that, and remember that it doesn't take that long to warm up your car. You're doing more harm than good, and if you're a believer in it, you're just throwing more CO2 into the atmosphere, which could be dangerous. 888-574-2723 is the number into the studio. At Ed Says CT on Twitter, and Ed Says at talkofconnecticut.com is the email should you wish to write something long form. Some of you out there almost got your wish. Everything stopped working for a second, but I'm okay. Everybody can relax and calm down. I will live to talk another day.